Hello and welcome to OCAV Radio. It's Friday, November the 19th here on CKLN 88.1 FM. And today is the first day of CKLN's Fun Fest. As you know, CKLN is if you've been listening for a while, you know it's a really great access point for community radio here in Toronto. And it takes some money to keep this radio station going. So we're doing 2 weeks of fundraising of Pledge Week. We're asking listeners to call in and pledge to CKLN some money, a little bit of money, whatever you can afford. And our pledge line is 416-595-1478. We've got some awesome people here on the phones waiting to take your call. They're very entertaining and awesome people. I suggest you call and give them a ring. Or you can also donate online at www.ckln.fm. So that's another great and easy way to pledge money for this fantastic radio station, community-based radio here at CKLN. And on today's OCAP radio show, we have John Clark from OCAP. John is one of the organizers. He's one of the elected organizers of OCAP, and he has the distinguished title of being the longest organizer at OCAP. He's been with OCAP for 20 years, and as people who've been following along might know, this November is OCAP's 20th anniversary. OCAP started 20 years ago in November, so it's a really big deal. It's really fantastic. There'll be a 20th anniversary celebration next Saturday night. That's November the 27th. It's at the Cecil Street Community Center starting at 6:30. There'll be a dinner followed by some pretty fantastic speeches and other entertainment, DJs, music, and general good times celebrating the history of OCAP. So I hope to see you all there. And right now we're just going to talk to John a bit about the history of OCAP. John, I wanted to ask you... Oh, hi, John.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you if you could tell us a bit about how OCAP started 20 years ago, if you could go a bit into that history.
Yeah. Well, in the late 1980s, there was, as there is today, a great deal of poverty. But one of the things that was happening was the Liberal government of the day, which was headed up by David Peterson, who people who are dealing with the Pan Am Games will know and love. Peterson's government was dealing with a crisis within the social assistance, within the welfare system. And rather than effectively deal with it, he did what governments frequently do, which was set up a group to study the issue. But this particular review committee got deluged with people and became quite a lightning rod in many ways for organizing. And so so after the review committee had brought down its recommendations and called for substantial increases in social assistance rates, the government did what governments usually do, which was shelve the thing and try to forget about it. And so there was a lot of clamor, a lot of organizing, and people in different organizations, including the Union of Unemployed Workers in London, Ontario, that I was with, got together and planned out a march against poverty. And we put three teams of marchers on the road in Windsor, Sudbury and Ottawa, and over a two-week period converged on the Ontario legislature and held a very large rally with really significant mobilizations all the way along. And that led to some substantial improvements for people at the time in terms of welfare policy and practices and an increase in the rates. But what we also did was we decided that we were going to try to build a long-term anti-poverty organization in the province, and that was the roots of OCAP. When we planned it, there were people in different cities, and there were lots of different organizations supporting it, including, I must say, the NDP caucus at Queen's Park, who had put quite considerable effort and energy into the thing and had to be congratulated for the work that they played.
So you can say that the NDP helped create OCAP?
I can say that the NDP helped create OCAP because it's objectively true and it needs to be said and it's fair. But what I can also say is that immediately after OCAP was coming into existence, the NDP got elected, and it is true that the legislative caucus of the NDP their enthusiasm for anti-poverty organizing took a bit of a nosedive at that particular point. And so the connections, the resources that we'd expected to emerge in a situation where we were challenging the Peterson government didn't happen, and OCAP was forced to concentrate on organizing primarily in Toronto, which is what we've been forced to do. Hence we're called the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, but in fact organized primarily in this city, although we've certainly had influencing significance in terms of helping people in other cities and being in some ways a model for people in other cities.
Right. So perhaps if history had played out differently and the NDP continued to have supported it financially, it might have been a more province-wide?
Those possibilities were there, but on the other hand, the formative period of OCAP was also marked by a very sharp debate about the kind of organization that it should be. And the initial conference, which took place, it was actually happening on the 27th of November in 1990. That founding conference had a very, very sharp debate over the question of what sort of organization we needed. And there were essentially two models that were put forward, which perhaps resonate today. One was a concerned citizens group of people to build a respectable lobby and try and tug the heartstrings of the people in power. And the other was to go into communities under attack and organize and mobilize and fight back. I had no prizes for guessing what side I was on. but we won the debate. About a quarter of the room got up and walked out. And OCAP was formed, and from that time on, we've charted a course of organising on the basis of using the power of disruptive collective action to win things for people.
Absolutely. And can you tell me a bit about how the organisation has changed over the years? Because it's been 20 years now, and you've seen it all throughout.
Right.
So,
right. Well, that basic debate. The results of that basic debate have always been, I think, the watchword of OCAP. That's our basic perspective. But how that's played out has changed over the years in a number of ways. Initially, of course, we were confronting what you might describe as a backsliding NDP regime in that they had come to power on a relatively reform, progressive agenda and weren't implementing it, but were going in the other direction, and challenging them posed a particular set of difficulties and challenges. Then we were dealing with Harris, and we certainly didn't have to worry about diplomacy on either side. At that point, there was just a very sharp struggle and a mobilization. And then the McGuinty government again has sort of a progressive front to its vicious attacks on poor people. So those differences have played out different ways. But it's also true that in the mid to late 90s, the organization grew in the sense that there was a whole grouping of people who were younger activists who got involved in the organization and sort of like changed the level of activism and our ability to organize, and the fact that we had now, within a few years, a whole range of seasoned, experienced organizers and activists. That made a really profound difference to the organization. And I think that period was, there was Seattle and there was mobilization around anti-globalization. And in some ways, the best of people that were part of an anti-globalization movement came into organizations like OCAP, because they weren't content to just go to summits periodically and chant things. They wanted to actually be in communities and struggle and make a difference on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm in any way trying to attack the notion of challenging the summits. I think that's very good. But I just make the point that I think a more ongoing form of social struggle is called for. Mm-hmm. And so those people came into OCAP and made a very big difference. And then as time went on, as well, the sort of the grouping, the you might say the periphery of people around the organization, the downtown homeless population, some of the public housing tenants that we'd organized and mobilized, people in different communities always have to give pride of place, I think, to the Somali community in Etobicoke, which has played such an incredible and outstanding role in the fight for the special diet and has changed the shape and direction of OCAP in so many ways. All those kinds of people have come in too. So the basic model we had, the basic sense of how to do things, has remained pretty constant. But how that's played out and what it's meant and what it's involved and how it's been represented has been a different thing.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. And John, so based on this model, there's been many actions over the years that OCAP has done. Can you tell me one of your favorite memories over the last 20 years of something that OCAP's done?
Well, it isn't so much that I could think of some moment.
Some hilarious thing where perhaps you maybe dressed up as caterers and went into Brian Mulroney's dinner?
That did happen. We did get double chefs and go in and disrupt his speech. That is true. We've done many such things like that. I got to say, though, the thing that is for me is the greatest thing about OCAP is to see people who are facing the most awful conditions and the greatest level of humiliation stand up and fight back. I mean, that's the thing that just makes you feel so incredible, you know. I mentioned the Somali community, and I think it's appropriate to use an example from the Somali community because of all, perhaps more than any other community in this city, they face racism and social exclusion and just massive, massive injustice. And so many people who have gone through so much have shaped this organization by being involved in it and by being so courageous and becoming so strong and giving a lead to other people. And just this week I was talking to a young Somali woman who I don't think I'm identifying her by saying this, but she when I was talking to her, didn't have any milk for her kids. Mm-hmm. And it was the most awful situation. A special diet had been cut. Her income was down to nothing, and she went into the welfare office and was talking about her situation. And the worker that she was dealing with told her that she was pregnant again. And why was this? Oh. And she told me what she said to her, and how she stood up to her, and how the worker had to go and had to climb down and apologize and beg her not to go to the manager over it and all this kind of stuff. And it's that sort of like strength and defiance that to me will be the thing when all said and done. I mean, it's all about human beings. It's all about pride and dignity, and that to me is the thing that's most precious about OCAP.
Right. Wow, John. Well, that's really inspiring. Wow. That's great. And I know that everyone listening and everyone a part of OCAP has been really inspired by you for the past 20 years. So we want to thank you so much for all your work and dedication to OCAP.
With a few problems along the way.
Oh, no, never, John. We really appreciate you coming in to talk about this here at CKLN. And thanks so much, John.
Thanks, Kelly.
And so once again, I'm going to go back to talking about how it's Fun Fest Week here at CKLN and about how we're asking people to call in to our pledge line right now. It's 416-595-1478. Unfortunately, John has to run out, so he won't be on the phones. Otherwise, you might have had a chance to talk to him personally, but you can call the office anytime and do that. Here at CKLN, you can click on www.ckln.fm to donate to this fantastic radio station and help keep this community radio going and alive. And also don't forget about the OCAP anniversary next Saturday. I guess it's going to be its true 20th anniversary on November the 27th at Cecil Street Community Center. The admission at the door is going to be from $0 to $100, so don't feel like if you don't have any money you can't attend. We're welcoming everyone who is supporters of OCAP at that. And up next we're going to hear a song, and then after that we're going to hear from another member of OCAP. So here we go.
Used to work on the underground, but working on the underground, you don't get to know your way around. England is a bitch, there's no escaping it. England is a bitch, there's no running away from it. Me get a little job in a big hotel, and after a while me was doing quite well. Them start me off as a dishwasher, but when me take a stock, me no turn clock watcher. England is a bitch, there's no escaping it. England is a bitch, nobody try to hide from it. when them give the little wage packet, first them rabbit with them big tax racket, you have to struggle to make ends meet. And when you go to your bed, you just can't sleep. England is a bitch. There's no escaping it. England is a bitch for true. And no lie me, I tell a true. Me used to work dig ditch when it cold, no bitch. Me did strong like a mule, but boy, me did fool. Then after a while, me just stopped the overtime. Then after a while, me just put on me tool. England is a bitch. There's no escaping it. England is a bitch. You have to know how to survive in it. Well, me do day work and me do night work. Me do clean work and me do dirty work. Them say that black man is very lazy. But if you see how me work, you would have said me crazy. England is a bitch. There's no escaping it. England is a bitch. You better face up to it. Them have a little factory up in a Brackley. In a this year factory, all them do is pack crockery. For the last 15 years, them get me labor. Now after 15 years, me fall out of favor. England is a bitch. There's no escaping it.
Hello. Hello, and welcome back to OCAP Radio. What you were listening to there was Linton Kwesi Johnson with England is a Bitch. That was in light of John's English accent here on OCAP Radio earlier, what we heard. I just want to remind people quickly again, we are here in the first day of Fun Fest at CKLN. We're looking for as many pledges as possible during OCAP Radio, and our pledge line is 416-595-1478, or you can donate online at ckln.fm. And up next here on OCAP Radio, we have one of our longtime members of OCAP Radio has just returned from a trip to the UK. We have AJ Withers here with an update from that. Hi, AJ.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me. I went to the UK for 2 weeks about a month ago, and I thought it was incredibly interesting, and I think it's really important for folks here to know what's going on there, because we're seeing massive cutbacks coming there, and many people there feel very strongly that they were inspired by Harris. And we know here that the government is looking to the UK for mirroring our immigration policy. So both of our governments really play off of each other when they're doing really awful, regressive, and oppressive things. So I think it's really important to know what's going on.
Yeah. So this is in light of the austerity measures that are going on. That's how they feel the connection to the Harris government?
Yes, wow. Very much so. Wow. So there's a few different ways that the cutbacks are coming down in the UK. They are doing massive cutbacks across the board around social services. In the UK, they have way more social housing than they do here. And a lot of people that live in social housing or council housing live on a housing subsidy or a housing benefit that many people who are on what we would call welfare or disability, but also just working poor folks, get that money and rely on that money to be able to pay their rent. And then also they have what's called incapacity benefits, which is basically disability, and then job seekers allowance, which is what we would call welfare here. All of those are being cut. One of the most significant cuts, though, is to the housing allowance, which is being capped at a set amount of pounds per week. And for some suburbs in around London or some areas, that cut isn't going to be very significant because the council housing rates, say, are £340 and the cut's going to be £330 or will be capped at £330. So it'll be an extra £10 a week for people to pay their rent. But in other places, it is the cap at the housing benefit is about what half the rent is for people pay in London and Westminster in particular. So in London, they're expecting to see virtually every single person that lives in social housing to be evicted because they can't pay their rent, which means a massive, massive exodus of poor people from the downtown core into the suburbs and other parts of England who are just going to find themselves homeless.
And let me just clarify. So they are living in, and I'm going to make analogies to here, they're living in housing that's similar to social housing here, TCHC. And even though that's government-run housing, they're going to cap your housing allowance at an amount that can't pay for that.
Exactly.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
And then when people are forced out to the suburbs, it's going to be, again, similar to here, when folks are forced out to social assistance housing in Scarborough where there are no services.
Exactly.
So it'll be that similar. And were you talking to folks that experienced that, that were going to?
Yeah, for sure. And not only are people going to get pushed out of the downtown core so that those housings can ultimately probably be converted to higher income housing, but the reality is that in the suburb areas of London, they are maxed out in terms of housing. Their housing is at full capacity, so people have nowhere to go. The government has actually block rented all of the bed and breakfasts that it could in the entire countryside surrounding London in order to put people somewhere for a little while when everyone gets kicked out of their housing. But after that point, there's nowhere for people to go. So there's going to be a massive, massive amount of homelessness throughout the UK, but particularly in London.
And so the government is fully aware then, as we can tell by them block renting bed and breakfast, they're fully aware that people are going to be kicked out of their housing in London.
Absolutely.
So what is... How are people organizing in these communities? Were you speaking to people who are organizing, and what is the plan to fight this absolutely disgusting process?
Well, certainly people are organizing. There's a London Coalition Against Poverty, there's an Edinburgh Coalition Against Poverty, and there's a number of other anti-poverty groups throughout the UK. Unfortunately, though, organized labor has not really done much organizing around these cuts. And a lot of what the organizing that has, what I talked to people about was really casework. And it was very, very important casework. But as far, by the time I left, the next big demonstration or the first big demonstration against these cuts was planned for next March, which is well after the cuts have been fully implemented. And just to give you an example, they're hoping to cut 800,000 people off of disability benefits through a number of loopholes. That's the entire number of people in social assistance in this province.
800,000. That wasn't 8,000. That was 800,000.
Yes.
The same amount of people that are on. That is appalling. I'm kind of struck dumb at this moment about that number. Wow.
Yeah, so what's going to happen there, who knows, and people are watching it really closely because certainly these are the most widespread cuts that have happened in a developed country in the north in a very, very long time. And I know a lot of governments are looking to it to see what happens, to see how much resistance there is, and to see what they can take from the UK and implement here and in other places. So I think it's really important to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. And is there anything that people, that listeners, that OCAP members here can be doing? I mean, it's a far way away. I mean, organizing our own communities. But is there anything that we can be doing to support the work that's going on in the UK?
Well, I think the best way to support it is to create a strong resistance here. And to make sure that when people try to bring cuts down, wherever they try to bring them down, they're met with resistance. But certainly there are things that people can do in solidarity. You can write a letter to the British government. You can express your support to any of the coalitions against poverty in the UK or other organizations. And links to their websites will be on our website very shortly. I think just people coming together and organizing and fighting back is the most important thing. And for governments to know wherever they try to bring these policies in place, that they'll be met with very serious resistance. And one other thing is that when I was in Edinburgh speaking, I was introduced by one of the founders of the Edinburgh Coalition Against Poverty, and he had said that the history between Edinburgh Coalition Against Poverty and OCAP went back very far to 1998, pre the existence of that organization, when people were doing organizing in the city and primarily targeting really abusive welfare workers there. And he had been arrested and up on charges and gotten a letter of support from OCAP and was very, very proud to have gotten that and very inspired that people here really cared about the resistance that was going on there. And so any kind of support, I think, very much goes noticed for a very, very long time.
Yeah, that's almost 12 years ago. So that's really incredible. That's really inspiring and neat that they're doing that. And wow, I know that here in Toronto, we'll be watching what people do in England and the UK, and watching those disgusting cuts be resisted, and we'll be cheering for them here. So thanks so much, AJ, for coming in and doing a really inspiring and important report back.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay. And we'll talk to you soon. We'll see you at the 20th anniversary. Okay. That's great. Okay. So back to the end of our show. I'm going to mention the Fun Fest Pledge Drive happening right now. First day of the Fun Fest Pledge Drive is here at CKLN. You can pledge at 416-595-1478, or you can donate at www.ckln.fm. And I just want to thank Kristen for calling in and donating. We really appreciate that here.
I'm also going to be making my donation right now.
Thank you, AJ. Great to hear. So thanks to everyone who's called in and donated. We really appreciate that here at CKLN because it's such a fantastic source of community news and radio and all that great stuff. And also, once again, I want to remind people about OCAP's 20th anniversary next Saturday at Cecil Street Community Center in the evening at 6:30. We also, speaking of fundraising, are having what we're calling the Month of Love for OCAP this month. So there's also a way for you to donate or become a monthly sustainer to OCAP on our website at ocap.ca. Much like CKLN, we OCAP depends actually entirely on donations. So it's really important. And at the 20th anniversary, we'll have a number of fundraising efforts going on there. We're going to have t-shirts for sale. So if you've been missing a new t-shirt for OCAP, you feel like you haven't got one in the last few years, we're going to have a whole huge amount of t-shirts for sale there with some fantastic OCAP art on them. And the OCAP logo. There's going to be posters for sale, calendars, and there'll be a silent auction at the fundraiser next Saturday. So once again, just want to encourage people to call in and pledge here at CKLN 88.1. And I want to thank John and AJ for being our guests here on OCAP Radio this evening. As always, Mark, the producer and techer of OCAP Radio, want to thank him. He's the driving force behind OCAP Radio, and we really appreciate that. And up next, we have Maria Elena Escobar with Barrio Nuevo. No, I just said the complete wrong thing. I can't remember the name of the show. And it's up next here on CKLN 88.1. Thanks. Bye-bye.